From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Central American nation of Nicaragua faces a major crisis that some are worried will turn into a civil war. Violence erupted in April after the government, headed by President Daniel Ortega, announced pension reforms. Police forces cracked down on anti-government protests, and since then, hundreds of people have been killed. The Inter-American Commission of Human Rights released a report condemning what it calls gross violations of human rights. Some have suggested the anti-government opposition is responsible for the violence. My guest is Courtney Morris, Assistant Professor of African American and Women's Studies at Penn State University and a news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. We had spoken to her earlier this year about Nicaragua. Welcome back to the show, Courtney.
Thank you, Sonali.
So this is becoming an increasingly important question as the violence doesn't seem to be ramping down. Many are worried that there's going to be a new wave of refugees fleeing the violence in Nicaragua, ending up having to travel to keep themselves safe and even come here, be among Hondurans who are coming to the U.S. escaping violence from their country. Who is responsible for the majority of the violence? If you look at photos of the protesters, there are makeshift guns that you see in people's hands, but there's also images of police violence.
Sure. I mean, the international response on who is responsible for the violence has been fairly unequivocal. And they are laying the blame for the deaths for, you know, more than 300 deaths now. Some reports are estimating as many as 450 people murdered. They are laying the blame for that, for those deaths at the government's doorstep. They are holding the national police responsible, and they are also holding responsible paramilitary organizations in the Nicaraguan press they're referred to as turbas, or gangs, mobs, who basically act with the backing of the state to attack protesters while the police look on and do nothing. And there have been no arrests for protesters who have been killed by these paramilitary organizations. There are no investigations into these murders being carried out by these paramilitary organizations. So it's pretty clear that what's happening is the state is attempting to cover up the fact that it is actively repressing citizens who are participating in these demonstrations.
There are claims that the National Endowment for Democracy, which is, of course, a U.S. agency that has often been used to foment unrest in other countries, has given the opposition in Nicaragua either hundreds of thousands of dollars or something on the order of millions of dollars. And Ortega has repeated that claim. What do you make of this? And, you know, is this the smoking gun that some are claiming it is in blaming the U.S. for fomenting a coup?
Yeah, I don't doubt that that's happened. And I think for many people who work in the so-called developing world, this kind of funding is common. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were, you know, conservative organizations that were receiving funding from the United States, you know, with the purposes of, you know, trying to foment or you know, support mobilizations against the Ortega administration. That is certainly, again, within the realm of political possibility. But I think that that sort of political possibility has to be weighed in the context of this larger political formation, which is developing. And frankly, you know, there are 6 million people who live in Nicaragua. I don't think that $1 million spread out over several years is nearly enough money to produce the kind of political response that we've seen in Nicaragua. When you look at the photographs of the demonstrations, we're talking hundreds of thousands of people in the street carrying flags, carrying posters, you know, shouting slogans against the state, who are angry about the ways that they feel that the state has failed them and continues to fail them and to erode the democratic process in Nicaraguan politics. So again, I wouldn't say that I would, you know, sort of dismiss those claims. It's possible. And it would appear based on the articles that I've read that certainly there are receipts in some cases of specific organizations that have received funding from the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy. But again, it's not clear to me that that would have been nearly enough to trigger the kind of political response that we've seen since April.
Now, I understand that President Daniel Ortega is admitting that there are armed groups but that are committing violence, but he links them to criminal organized crime, basically, with links to the United States and other Latin American countries. But you're saying that these are paramilitary forces, that is, unofficial government forces?
Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying. That is the overwhelming response from the Nicaraguan press. As you mentioned in the report that was produced by the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, they interviewed thousands of people, all of whom reported that they had been attacked or had witnessed attacks by paramilitary organizations in demonstrations that were taking place throughout the country. So the response, again, has been very clear. Now, in terms of the administration's response to the killings, they've been engaging in a variety of forms of doublespeak around the matter. Initially, they refused to acknowledge that these groups existed at all. And then when they finally began to admit that there may be groups that were engaging in violence, they attempted to shift all of the blame to the protesters. That's a strategy that they've continued to use, saying that the protesters are the ones who are responsible for the majority of the deaths. And finally, in a more recent interview that he gave to Fox News and to CNN in Spanish, Daniel Ortega has now begun to say that these paramilitary groups that exist are actually volunteer police forces that have come in to provide reinforcements to the national police. So they can't really seem to get their story straight in terms of what's actually happening. But the response from local media, from national media in Nicaragua, and from the international human rights community is very clear about who is carrying out the violence, and it is the state.
Now, U.S. Press Secretary, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders issued a statement on the Nicaragua situation in late July. She said the U.S. strongly condemns the ongoing violence and the human rights abuses committed by the Ortega regime, and, you know, went on to give a little bit more detail. Of course, when you have the U.S., particularly a right-wing government like the Trump administration, but really anytime, even under Democratic leaders, when the U.S. condemns human rights violations against the leader of another country, we tend to have a knee-jerk reaction here in the U.S. that if the among the left here, that if the U.S. government is against something, then they're probably attacking the good guys. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I think given the United States' history of active intervention and political meddling in Nicaragua, that response is not surprising, and is a logical response. But I think that for those of us who work in Nicaragua, and particularly for those of us who've been working in Nicaragua since Daniel Ortega returned to the presidency in 2007, the situation on the ground is a lot more complicated. And so, you know, I think that on one hand, yes, it's important to be mindful and critical of the ways that the United States has often been involved in destabilizing democratically elected regimes, democratically elected governments, rather, in Latin America. But in the case of what's happening right now in Nicaragua, Daniel Ortega has really, this is in many ways the sort of consensus analysis seems to be that this is a monster of his own making, that the kind of process of authoritarian drift that he was taking Nicaragua into and the forms of political repression that his administration has been engaged in over the last 11 years really created the kind of perfect storm of events so that when he delivered the Social Security reforms in April, it catalyzed this long simmering political discontent in Nicaragua that just exploded in a way that I don't think even the Ortega administration was prepared for. So the critique of U.S. intervention is understandable, but in this case, we should not sort of allow our concerns around U.S. intervention to cloud our analysis and our understanding of the very real forms of anti-democratic political repression that have been characteristic of the Ortega administration since Ortega has returned to power.
And of course, some of that also stems from Ortega's background and his historic leftist credentials and the history in Nicaragua with the FSLN, his party. And I'm wondering if you can also explain to our audience what your experience has been in Nicaragua. What is the work that you've done there and your experience there to give us a sense of your understanding of the situation? You're someone who's been intimately involved in a lot of the and in studying the movements there, right?
Sure. You know, and I think and I am going to answer your question. You know, so One of the things that I think people who've been really concerned about, the you know, the sort of sense that the U.S. must be fomenting a coup against the Ortega administration, trying to take out this ostensibly left-wing administration, you know, part of the response is like, well, where did these protesters come from? Who are these people? You know, why are they asserting themselves now in this way? And who's behind this? And, you know, if you work in Nicaragua, one of the things that becomes apparent very quickly when you look at who the protesters are is that they're not people who just came out of nowhere. They're actually people who have been organizing for quite some time and who've had a very real critique of, you know, the ways in which the Ortega administration has systematically dismantled the country's political institutions and its democratic process. And so I've been working in Nicaragua since 2004. I went there for the first time as an undergrad, you know, who was very enamored of the Sandinista revolution, had a lot of respect for the people who participated in that process, and the political vision that they tried to build in Nicaragua, right? And I've been working there ever since. I work primarily on the Caribbean coast with Black and Indigenous communities who've been struggling against the state to, you know, basically force the state to recognize their longstanding territorial claims to communal properties on the coast. And the Ortega administration has actually been, you know, has consistently violated the territorial rights of Black and Indigenous communities on the Caribbean coast. And they have been some of the most vocal critics of the Ortega administration for its failure to uphold its own laws, the nation's laws, to protect the cultural and territorial rights of these communities. So the biggest violation of Black and Indigenous territorial rights by the Ortega administration really came in 2013 when the National Assembly, which is controlled by the Frente Sandinista, Daniel Ortega's party, passed the Law 840, which essentially gave the government carte blanche to build an interoceanic canal through the country that would rival the Panama Canal. And that canal was going to cut through Black and Indigenous territories, as well as the private properties of a number of hundreds of mestizo campesinos whose properties would be in the way of the canal. And people rightly saw this as an assault on their territorial rights, but also saw it as an assault on the sovereignty of the nation, because the canal was set to be built by an obscure Chinese businessman that nobody had ever heard of until the law was passed. And he essentially had the right to exercise eminent domain to oversee the construction of the canal. So the political response to this law was overwhelming. Environmentalists were opposed to it because they were concerned about what the long-term environmental impacts of it would be. Black and Indigenous communities were opposed to it because they were concerned that it would disrupt their territorial rights, violate their territorial rights. You know, mestizo farmers were adamantly opposed to the canal, also because of their concerns around the lack of protection of property rights. And people throughout across the political spectrum began to mobilize in 2013 to resist the law. People mobilized and filed something like 38 constitutional suits against the law. It's the single largest number of suits that have ever been filed against a piece of legislation in Nicaragua's history. So again, these are people, the people who we're seeing participating in the protests now, many of them are the same people who have been making these critiques about the, you know, the sort of the repression of the Ortega administration and the anti-democratic sort of ethos of the Ortega administration. They have been organizing and criticizing the state for a long time. And I've had the opportunity to work in Nicaragua and to see those political developments happen on the ground. So I'm not surprised that people are mobilizing right now to see Ortega removed from power. They've been demanding that for quite some time.
Now, there was an interesting report that emerged that our Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, agency here in the United States was coordinating with the Nicaraguan government to deport undocumented Nicaraguans from the U.S. back to the nation. What sort of ties are there between Nicaragua and the U.S., between the Ortega regime and the U.S. government? Because Ortega is portraying the U.S. as basically, you know, a rival or an opposition or just a hostile force.
Right. And I mean, I think, again, you know, Daniel Ortega is using and recycling a kind of Cold War era rhetoric to defend himself against critiques that he is engaging in violent repression of his own citizens. And so, you know, the relationship between Nicaragua and the United States since the Sandinistas left power after they were voted out of power in 1990, you know, the relationship between Nicaragua and the United States has always been sort of fragile and tenuous, right? And so since Daniel Ortega has returned to power in 2007, you know, on one hand, he's really, you know, represented himself in public discourse as a kind of anti-imperialist firebrand who, you know, sees himself as aligned against the United States, which is an imperial, you know, sort of colonizing power that's always attempting to meddle in the sovereign affairs of Latin American nations. And that performance of anti-imperialism is actually contradicted by the actual policy sort of positions of his administration, which is that, you know, despite his sort of fraught relationship with the United States in the past, the relationship since he's returned to power has actually been fairly stable, right? Nicaragua has continued to enjoy political and economic aid from the United States. He's basically agreed to participate in the United States' ongoing war on drugs. So, you know, Nicaragua is a kind of faithful and reliable partner in the international war on drugs. And they have participated in all the forms of anti-narcotics, you know, sort of counter-narcotics policing that the United States has laid out. They fall in line with that without question. When we look at the question of immigration, you know, on one hand, Daniel Ortega is traveling, is speaking to the international press and claiming that the United States is fomenting a coup in his country. And on the other hand, his administration is quietly still partnering and working with the United States to allow the transportation of deported Nicaraguans back into the country and has not in any way questioned that policy at all. So it's a sort of bizarre moment in which we see that Daniel Ortega is really invested in maintaining the appearance of a hostile and antagonistic relationship to the United States, when in practice that's not actually what's happening at all.
How real is the danger that this crisis could continue and actually turn into what some are saying, you know, might even be a civil war? I mean, that sounds like incredibly dramatic and a dramatic escalation of what's happening right now. But if indeed 300 to 400 people have been killed just since April, and Nicaragua is not a very big country, how seriously could this escalate?
Well, you know, I think in any other situation, the idea of a civil war would seem far-fetched and implausible. But this is a country that actually did have a civil war not that long ago. The Contra War that, you know, the United States backed and funded in the 1980s only ended in the late 1980s, 1987, 1988. So, you know, you're dealing with a population where a significant number of the population has professional military training, has rendered military service to the country. And after the revolution ended, part of the process of demobilization and integrating Contras back into the body politic was, the state sponsored a campaign to basically de-arm the populace. But obviously not everybody gave up their guns. So the possibility of a civil war is not something that is, it's not beyond the realm of political possibility. That said, based on everything that I'm reading in the Nicaraguan press and what I'm getting from people that I know who live there and who are participating in the protests, people are really reticent and loath to go back to war because Nicaraguans, better than most people, really understand the cost of war. The Contra War cost something like 50,000 people died in that conflict. And so I think that even though there's a possibility of war, it's not a possibility that people are really, that it's not one that they really want to pursue at this point. That said, I do think that the conflict with the state, I don't see the protests stopping anytime soon. Daniel Ortega, in the last 2 months, basically, you know, ran what he called the cleanup operation, Operación Limpieza, to break down the protests, to break down roadblocks that protesters had built to keep paramilitary groups out of their communities and out of their neighborhoods. He basically used the police forces and these paramilitary groups to demobilize those roadblocks and to really violently crush the protests. But that, I think, is ultimately going to backfire because it seems more than anything to have further inflamed public sentiment against the state. And so even if Daniel Ortega is able to establish a kind of a relative calm or peace through the use of force, I think that he's going to find that the political reasons that people are protesting seem more valid and legitimate than ever before. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that Daniel Ortega has crushed the protests by any means. That's what he's saying, right. That's what he would like people to believe. But I don't think that these protests are going to stop anytime soon.
Is there a political opposition that could challenge Ortega and the FSLN for political power? And if so, is it an organized one? Or is it right wing backed by the U.S.?
Well, I think this is actually, you know, one of the major issues that we're seeing with the protests, and to the larger question of, you know, does the United States have a role in this? Is there a coup being backed by the United States? Part of the reason why I personally, based on my experience working in Nicaragua, part of the reason why I find that explanation implausible is that, you know, the protests represent a fairly broad swath of Nicaraguan sort of civil society and society in general. So people across the sort of ideological spectrum are represented in these protests. And at this point, the protests really have not been able to articulate a political vision beyond, we want Daniel Ortega out of power, right? So part of what we're seeing is that people are converging on that shared desire to see the Ortega administration removed from power through a process of early elections. They've been very clear that early elections is the desired route for seeing Daniel Ortega exit from power. But beyond that, they've not articulated a vision of what life in Nicaragua, what politics in Nicaragua looks like after Daniel. And there doesn't appear to have emerged a central political figure or a central political party around which people could sort of mobilize as a kind of viable political alternative to Daniel Ortega. In many ways, the protest movement remains a sort of diffuse political formation where power is not concentrated in any one political party. And most of the political parties that exist in Nicaragua at this point have already been involved and have already been co-opted by the state to such a degree that Nicaraguans largely have, what we're witnessing is a vote of no confidence in the Nicaraguan political system as it has existed for the last 11 years. Right. And that doesn't just include the Frente Sandinista, it includes political parties on the right, and it includes other political parties on the left as well. The only political party that I could see that could potentially mount some meaningful alternative or present a meaningful alternative to the Ortega administration would potentially be the Sandinista Renewal Movement that was founded by former Sandinistas who left the party in the 1990s because they could see the direction that the party was moving in. But at this point, they also have not been able to really mobilize a strong base of support, electoral support, that could pose a real threat to Daniel Ortega. So it's a kind of a frightening and exhilarating moment because on one hand, people are coming together to resist the Ortega state, but it's frightening in the sense that it's not clear what would come after Daniel Ortega or who would come after him.
Right. Well, Courtney, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Courtney Morris is an assistant professor of African American and Women's Studies at Penn State University and a news correspondent for our program. We've been discussing the crisis in Nicaragua. I'm Sonali Kohatka. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.